Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wonder who wrote the book of love? Tell me.
It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. It's open mic to Mike, 1-800-449-8255. We are open for business. Let's hear some music. Apparently they went to the same high school I did, the Cleft Tones. I don't know if any of them are still around or if they're still tone deaf or whatever, but they were great, I got to tell you. Now, I have a question for you. But let's hear the music. Forget me. Here's the question of the day. A few years ago, a Republican lobbyist by the name of Jack Abramoff was sent to prison for buying access to politicians. Today, people buy access to Obama, and they don't go to prison. They go right to the White House. Here's a headline out of the Washington Free Beacon. Democratic National Cronyism. Dem convention co-chair's company received $230 million in stimulus money and hired Podesta Group to lobby. Jim Rogers, the co-chairman and lead fundraiser for the Demon Cat National Convention host committee, is well-versed in the art of political cronyism. So he gives a couple of hundred grand to the Democrats, and he gets back millions and millions of dollars in contracts. And I want you to listen very carefully to what I'm about to tell you, because to me it's the same as Jack Abramoff. The only difference is there were some honest politicians around when Abramoff did it, and there was an independent FBI when Abramoff did it. Today, it's all under, let's say, a one-stop shop. The buck stops in Obama's pocket. Whatever he wants, they do. There is no independent FBI. There's no independent DHS. There's no independent Congress. There's just one single dictator in the White House. I want you to listen to this and tell me you think this is okay. In 2009, this company enlisted the services of the Podesta Group, a lobbying firm founded by John Podesta, the former president of the radical left-wing Center for American Progress and co-chairman of the Obama-Biden transition team, and his brother Tony Podesta. Since then, Duke Energy has paid the firm $860,000, listen to this, to lobby, quote, to support the passage of climate change and energy legislation, and, quote, energy efficiency and clean energy solutions. In other words, they're in the business of creating companies that cure a problem that doesn't exist. And they got back a lot of money for what they put in. They gave a couple hundred grand, and according to this article, they received $230 million from Obama in stimulus money after hiring lobbyists to lie about global warming and get money to support so-called green energy products, including smart grid development and so-called wind energy storage. Do you know how many jobs were created by Duke Energy with all this money? Well, hold on to your hats, because it's an enormous amount. According to recovery.gov, Duke Energy created 196.6 jobs as a result of the grants from Obama. Okay? That's the story right here. Now, story number two is a little more troubling in a way. You expect cronyism, you expect corruption from Obama, and you expect him to get away with it. That we know already. But how about this one? Bloomberg seeks to evict churches from New York City schools. New York City School Board has had banned the longtime practice of allowing churches to rent space on weekends in school buildings that would otherwise sit vacant. Now Bloomberg is throwing churches out of the schools on the weekend. He's saying there's a separation of church and state. Now, is there a separation of church and hate is what I'd like to know. Now, I realize Mayor Bloomberg has a show on my station, the station I'm on in New York City, WOR, where he expresses his opinions, as I do in the early evening and late afternoon. If I could speak directly to the good mayor, Here's the question I would ask of Mayor Bloomberg. I would say, Your Honor, do you think your move of kicking churches out of empty schools on weekends advances Christian-Jewish dialogue? Mr. Mayor, do you think this advances the Christian-Jewish dialogue? Now, of course, I don't have a chance to ask this question because I doubt very much that His Honor would take the question. But I'd like to know why Mayor Bloomberg, of all the things going on in New York City, would seek to spend executive time throwing churches out of vacant New York City schools on weekends. This is an astounding story, by the way. 1-800-449-8255. This also eliminates several million dollars the city earns from rentals to the churches. Now, I have no idea why Bloomberg would do this, nor who he's catering to. Here's another story. Gingrich to get another $10 million from big gambler, big casino. Big casino backer gives him another $10 million. That's an interesting story. Mr. Adelson is giving him yet another $10 million to this loser cannonball who's destroyed Romney. And I'd like to ask why. Since we know Gingrich can't win, and we know that Adelson's about as smart as they come, is Adelson doing this in order to neutralize Romney, in order to advance the Obama agenda, which will help gambling in America? I have no way to know. I'm only a man on a microphone somewhere in the middle of the world. 1-800-449-8255. At the same time, Obama is nuking our nukes, as I put it. My headline was picked up by Bill Gertz. Thank you, Bill, for the credit. I do appreciate it. But it was my headline the other day, nuking our nukes. But Bill does good work, so I'll forgive him this time. 1-800-449-8255, Albany, New York. Jack, what's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, it's kind of off topic, Mike, but I'll get right to the point.
It's okay, because it's open mic to Mike Friday. I wouldn't expect anybody to talk about Obama's corruption and cronyism, nor about Bloomberg's kicking Christian churches out of schools. So what's on your mind?
Well, you do talk a lot about substance abuse and the way it's affected, and just I'll get right to that point is my own daughter, 17 years old, we'll call her Debbie, I found some pot in her drawer. I don't do it. I haven't done it probably since I was, in my younger years, and I live a pretty straight and narrow life. And she even listens to your show with me, and she seems pretty right-wing for a kid 17. And it just, we had to have a big confrontation, and,
Well, here's the thing to do. Don't yell at her, which you may have already done, because you just said you smoked pot yourself. Is that correct?
At one point in my life, I did, yeah.
Well, all right, so this is that point in her life. Therefore, if you come down on her like a ton of bricks, you're liable to make her smoke more and even do, some harder drugs. So I know it's hard to control yourself because you love her and you want to protect her from the evil weed. You want to protect her from the cancer she's going to get if she keeps smoking marijuana. Not only cancer of the soul, but cancer of the actual body politic. You've got to point out to her the dangers of marijuana strictly from a medical point of view. Forget everything else. You've got to show her in black and white that marijuana has more toxins in it than do cigarettes. That's a known medical fact. It's a physiological reality. It's not made up by me. I don't care what the psychos will tell you. Marijuana is more harmful to the body's health than is tobacco itself. And I'm not going to go into it again right now, but if you Google toxins in marijuana smoke, you'll find everything you need to reach an intelligent daughter. Will that work for you, Jack?
It's definitely a good way to start. Thank you very much.
That's what I would suggest, because children are rational. They're smart. And if you show them that they're poisoning themselves, you'll understand it. Two other topics. Bloomberg kicking churches out of schools. The churches have been renting, small churches, renting schools for services. They've been battling the city for 16 years. The city has been trying to evict the church, but the church has been protected by an injunction that allowed houses of worship to continue using spaces in the city. Now Bloomberg has cracked down with all of the drugs and crime in the city, with all of the cronyism, with all of the corrupt contracting in the city. He goes after the church and wants to kick them out of the public school space. Why would he do this? And if I could ask the good mayor a question, it would be very civil. If I could sit down and have a cup of green tea with the very sensitive mayor, I would say, Your Honor, do you think this advances the Christian-Jewish dialogue? I'll be right back.
Savage.
bow, 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 bow.
Can't we be sweethearts? Why don't we fall in love right from the start? You're the girl I'm thinking of.
Is Rock and Roll Friday. Come on, smile. You know life's terrible anyway, so what's the point of being sad? Now, if you're a hippie, or an ex-hippie who remembers the good old days, and you're glad that you finally have someone like yourself in the White House, tell me if the following food pyramid doesn't apply to you. Instead of selecting one from the dairy or milk family, one from the bread or wheat family, one from the meat family, one from the vegetable family, I think that you know that you select one from the opioids, one from the cannabinoids, one from the alcohols, and one from the deep fryer. I'm positive you do. That's the the food pyramid of the left-wing hippie. I invented that the other day and had so much fun with it that I wrote it into the new Jack Hatfield novel where he's debating with a character called Abe the aging hippie, who they're antagonists in my new novel. I created a new character, Abe the poster man. But that won't be out for a year, so don't look for the book in your store in the next year. It's a long way off. But, you know, you can get yourself very, very upset if you really let this news get to you. The level of corruption is that of Argentina during the generals. The only thing missing are the black cars roving the streets, taking people off the streets who criticize the generals. But, you know, give Obama another 4 years and you'll have that private army better funded than the U.S. military. Because, you don't understand this. Obama lives up to everything he promises. Charles, do you have that soundbite of Obama's campaign when he was going to create his own private army? Get the soundbite ready, because here's what you're going to get, you good liberals. If you reelect Obama, and if, you know, by the way, you look at Romney, the man looks like a crushed man. His shoulders are slumped over. His eyes look like a beaten. It's frightening to see what Newt Gingrich and that sweater Santorum did to him. I mean, it breaks my heart to see it. He's a decent man. That's why they beat him. That's why they've beaten them up, because they're not decent men. See, Romney is actually a decent, good man. Gingrich is the opposite of a decent, good man. And Santorum is, let us put it to you this way, an unknown quantity. Probably a very aggressive, blue-collar guy who pushed himself as far as he could. Nothing wrong with that. But I don't trust Santorum. He's a little too sanctimonious for my particular taste. Nevertheless, you look at Romney right now. His shoulders are hunched. And he looks beaten up. So if you get Obama again, this man will live up to every one of his promises, including destroying the U.S. military and creating his own private army, better funded and better armed than the U.S. military. Now, in order to do this, first he's got to decimate the U.S. military, which he's doing along with Leon Panetta, a lifetime left winger, and along with the, let us say, other players who have been planted into the military to feminize the military as rapidly as they can and to crush the U.S. Marines in particular, because they're the last vestige of hope for those of us who fear a military sort of a coup of the executive power. So once he crushes and gelds the military, he can then create his own private army. And who might they be? We don't know. His own private army could be made up of, what's that group? The ones that he funded? I even forget the names of them. No, the Black Panthers are too... The Acorn Group could be given weapons. The Nation of Islam could be deputized by Obama. You don't know what this man is capable of. There's no way to know what he's capable of. But do you have that soundbite if they think I'm just rambling on? All right, here is your president before he was president. Listen.
We cannot continue to rely only on our military in order to achieve the national security objectives that we've set. We've got to have a civilian national security force that's just as powerful, just as strong, just as well-funded.
Excuse me? Now, you see, if I were running for president, and I never will, never would, I wouldn't run for dog catcher, I would have spent every minute on that campaign trail. I don't care what they would have thrown at me. I would have said, I'm not answering that question. Here's what I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask you why you let Obama talk about a civilian national security force, Wolf Blitzer. I'm going to ask you why you haven't asked Obama what he means by a civilian national security force, George Stephanopoulos. I'd ask them questions. I wouldn't answer questions. After all, if I'm a candidate for the presidency, why should I answer questions of a Lilliputian who works for the media barons? Why would I answer their questions? Why wouldn't I force them to answer my questions, to show true leadership? And there, my friends, is the crux of the problem. The Republicans killed each other on the campaign trail when they had every opportunity to expose the corruption and the deviousness and the dangers that we face in this country right now. Now, I'm only a talk show host. I'm not a politician. But I'm asking you a couple of questions today. Why would Bloomberg go out of his way to antagonize Christians in New York City by kicking churches out of schools when this is a long, festering, 16-year-long debate? Why would little old Bloomberg, why would this tassel-shoed Bloomberg go out of his way to antagonize Christians? I would ask him, why do you do this? Do you think this advances the Christian-Jewish dialogue, Mr. Mayor? I don't know why no one would ask him that. What's he doing this for? What does he hope to gain? Who is he appeasing? Who is he appeasing by Bloomberg doing this against Christians? Why is he doing it now? That's the biggest problem in New York, is kicking a little church out of a school when the school is empty on the weekends and it's just a shell, a building. At that point, it's not even a school. It's just a shell. The founders said a separation of church and state, which is excellent. What they meant was that we didn't want these schools teaching religious dogma. We understand that. We're not a theocracy. But when the school is not in session, it's not a school. It may be owned by the city. It may have books in it. It may have a blackboard or computers. But at that point, it's only a shell. It's real estate. So if it's real estate, why would you go out of your way to kick a little church out, Mr. Bloomberg? Who is it that you are appeasing by doing it? Why is Adelson, the gambling magnate, supporting Newt Gingrich, giving him another $10 million to keep the attacks on Romney up? I mean, the questions are amazing. And that's why there's no such thing as a slow day in the Savage Nation. Lead story, no one even heard me. Democratic convention co-chairs company received $230 million in stimulus money, had hired the Podesta Group to lobby on the behalf of so-called global warming and to get tons and tons of money from you, the taxpayer, to create stuff for a problem that doesn't even exist. Global warming is a fraud.
Savage.
I would argue that the Constitution, which is the ultimate body of laws here, prohibits or requires you to not have worship services in a public building. You can disagree with that, and that's what the courts are there to decide, not whether you're right or I'm right on a moral basis, but what does the Constitution say?
You see, so Bloomberg is lying, in my opinion, by parsing the truth, because the separation of church and state was established to prevent us from becoming a theocracy, to prevent us from becoming a nation where there was a state religion, to prevent the teaching of religion in a school setting during school instructional hours. Bloomberg knows that. He's an intelligent man. And yet he says the opposite. He wants to kick a church out of the schools when the church has been renting the school for 16 years on weekends. An empty building. After all, a building is just a building. If it's not a school in session, it's a building, isn't it? And so he knows that. He knows that, and yet he's doing this for some reason. I don't understand it, because constitutionally he knows this is not true. The courts have upheld the church's right to use the empty school. So Bloomberg is not advancing the Christian-Jewish dialogue. In fact, he's damaging it with his liberal, fanatic liberal agenda, no matter how polished his speech may be. It's rather bigoted as far as I'm concerned. It's a Christophobic agenda that Bloomberg seems to be expressing to me. That's right, Christophobic agenda coming out of Bloomberg, in my opinion. Why is he doing it? That's the part I don't understand. Of all the problems and corruption, vice, graft in New York, crime, why would he be picking on a little church like this? Lou in New York, maybe you have the answer. On WOR, a station that broadcast the mayor and I at different times, what do you think? Why would Bloomberg waste executive time on an issue such as this?
I believe, Dr. Savage, that it's total payback for the Obama policies in health care that he's getting pushback right now on regarding the whole condom issue and birth control.
Oh, you mean because the Christian churches have dared to stand up to the petty dictator in the White House? Bloomberg is acting on his behalf by attacking the churches?
yes, doctor, this is, he's walking in lockstep with Obama through a back door.
But what would he gain by doing this? What would Bloomberg gain by doing this?
Favors with Obama. That's all I can think of, doctor. That's all I can think of.
I don't understand why the mayor would spend executive time and money on a thing like this. Who is this hurting? Tell me who it's hurting. Let's start with that. Let us start with that. Who the heck is the church hurting by renting a space of a school space on a weekend for a church service that teaches morality? Who are they hurting? Bloomberg! Who are they hurting, Bloomberg? Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Listen, I just want to say with Bloomberg, I'm a Jew myself. I'm originally from New York, as a matter of fact. I moved out of his wonderful city, and I've used that facetiously, okay? And I'm going to tell you why what he's doing. I don't know why he's doing it, but I think he's going to create. He's probably purposely trying to create anti-Semitism. It's the only thing I can think about. I mean,
Why would he want to create anti-Semitism? I know he's doing it.
I don't know.
I know he is stirring up anti-Semitism amongst Christians. I don't know why he would do that. He's certainly intelligent enough to know this would antagonize the Christian community. Do you know that after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear this case last December, do you know that on January 12th, Bloomberg unleashed New York City police on these Christians and arrested 43 pastors and church members who used the occasion of Mayor Michael Bloomberg's State of the City speech at a Bronx high school to protest the ban? Do you know that he had them arrested?
Yeah, I know, and I tell you the truth. I believe this about Bloomberg. I believe he's one of these rich comic...
All right, let's stop right here. We know what he is, but why is he picking on a little old church at this time? The city makes several million dollars a year from rentals to the churches. Why is he doing this? Why is he doing this? The city of New York was knocked down on this after the U.S. Supreme Court declined to hear the case last December. And yet the city is going after these churches. What is Bloomberg doing? Why is he doing this? Why is the casino magnate Adelson backing Newt? Let's go to that question. Let's go to Las Vegas itself. Richard, welcome to the Savage Nation on the question of Mr. Adelson backing Newt with another $10 million. Why?
Mr. Adelson, Michael, is an Israeli. I know somebody that's high up in his corporation. And he feels that Newt is the only guy that will best protect Israel from the Palestinian threat, terror threats, etc. And that's the reason he's backing him.
Adelson's an Israeli, not an American Jewish man. He's an Israeli by birth?
Yes.
And are you sure of that?
He has people working for him that are. He goes back there quite often.
Well, irrespective of whether he is Israeli or goes to Israel, your statement unto itself has validity in my mind. So he's backing Newt because he thinks Newt's a better friend of Israel than Romney. Is that it?
Simply that.
It's as simple as that. It's possible. But is Romney antagonistic towards Israel? As a Christian, he seems to be very supportive of Israel.
I don't know. That's his opinion, Michael. That's the only thing I can
Well, let me put it to you this way. I support Israel, but I support America first. Does that make sense to you?
I'm with you.
I put U.S. interests above that of Israel for one reason. If the U.S. is too weak to defend Israel, then it's a moot point as to what Israel does. So therefore, we come first. I don't like the tail wagging the dog at all. And as I said yesterday, and I've received some heat for this, from the professional savage haters, Israel has been given billions of dollars a year by the U.S. for the last 60 years. God bless them. They have the strongest military in the Middle East by a great measure. Why can't Israel defend itself? Why must we be the big brother in the schoolyard when apparently we can't even defend ourselves anymore? Why is Israel not doing its own job? Well, the answer is it's not just a military question. I'm not naive. This is a diplomatic political question. And apparently Israel's a small country in a very big world. And China is opposed to Israel acting. Russia's opposed to Israel acting. Turkey is opposed to Israel acting. Not to mention every Arab country on the planet. Not to mention the Quislings in France and England. So who's Israel's friend? Nobody. So, therefore, they have to do what's best for themselves and take the consequences, because no matter what Israel does, they're going to be hated. That's the way it is. If they act and they defend themselves, they'll be put down by everybody, but secretly behind the closed doors, no doubt Saudi Arabia will give out a big sigh of relief, and so will Jordan, and so will the other Sunni Arab nations who are terrified of Ahmadinejad's madness. However, if Israel does not act, and one day we wake up and we see Tel Aviv smoking, what then? The world will say, what a terrible thing. Now may I get on with whatever you get on with. Who's going to really care? Do you think anyone's going to care? I mean, honest to God, do you see the people in the streets walking around you? They would step over a dead body. I want you to look around at the faces of the average American walking down the streets of whatever city you're in. Take a look at them. Do you think that they would really reach out to a situation? They'll walk over a dead body. We'd be like Calcutta. Don't you step around homeless people? Would you have ever thought you would in your life? But you've grown up to live with homeless people. You step around them. They're part of the landscape, aren't you? You've gotten used to it. After Governor Brown's father released them from mental hospitals into the streets, the city has been plagued with the homeless. And we've gotten used to the homeless. They get plenty of money. Billions of dollars for homeless people. Most of it is wasted. But that's a whole issue that you don't even want to hear my opinion on, believe me. Because there's no need for people to be living in the gutters. The money is there, only it's not used in the right way. You build them shelters and you make them stay in the shelters. End of story. You make it a crime to sleep in the gutter. You make it a crime to urinate inside a mailbox. You make it a crime to harass men and women as they're going to dinner. You make it a crime to aggressively panhandle, and you put them into a work area if they're healthy enough to work. You clean them up and you make them work. And when they're healthy enough to go out into the world, they go out in the world. Until then, the state takes care of them because you're spending the money anyway. But I don't have the same viewpoint as Mayor Bloomberg on issues such as attacking Christians while supporting ethnic groups, or shall I say other pressure groups. Suicide bomber stopped on the way to Capitol. The M word is missing. You have to read the entire story to see the word Muslim. Authorities arrested a man on his way to the U.S. Capitol for what he thought would be a suicide attack on one of the nation's most symbolic landmarks, reported today. Again, you have to read the entire article to get to the bottom of it. You could think it's an Amish person in a buggy who was on the way to the White House with a whip and a mule. You could think it was a nun, a flying nun, heading to the U.S. Capitol for a suicide mission, according to the article by the Associated Propagandists. You could think it was a Hasidic man in a black coat running to the U.S. Capitol for a suicide mission by the headline of the article. But no, it wasn't. Once again, the name is Amin El Khalifi, a 29-year-old of Moroccan descent. That's paragraph 2. But then you have to go down to paragraph 6 to get to the essence of it. A short time before the arrest, he had been praying at a, fill in the blank, mosque, synagogue, Buddhist temple. Answer, mosque. But again, you have to go to paragraph 7 for that one. At the same time, the FBI has purged all of its terror warnings and terror alerts and documentation about potential terrorists in America. Any training manual in the FBI that speaks of Islam as and Muslims as being prone to violence has been purged as a result of the enemy within, who has penetrated every intelligence service in the United States of America and undermined them, like retroviruses, in my opinion. So, it's Rock and Roll Friday. I mean, I don't want to freak you out or bore you. Great articles on my website. How Warren Buffett Plays Politics to Make Money by Peter Schweitzer. Of course he has. You fall for that nice mental, the oracle, the oracle of wherever, of Omaha. Yeah, some oracle. He's a smart operator. He doesn't have to wear gold chains and swagger to do these things. He put on a business suit and cut his hair short, drove an old Buick, and schlumped into the White House. That's all. Stupid he isn't. But he doesn't play the wise guy with the gold chains and the swagger. He knows how to do it. That's what you should teach your children. Get a law degree, cut your hair short, and schlump around with a briefcase. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation. We're talking about many important topics and some unimportant topics. Just a fact corrector. As I suspected, Mr. Adelson is not Israeli. Adelson is an American immigrant born in the Ukraine. I believe his wife is Israel-born. She's an American citizen. And Mr. Adelson owns a newspaper in Israel. So he does have close ties with Israel. So what? Good for him. God bless him. And he has every right to support Newt Gingrich. I wouldn't support Newt Gingrich for whatever reason. Obama was in San Francisco yesterday, raking in the cash as fast as possible. And he stopped for takeout dim sum at a restaurant I wouldn't go to. It's actually not one of the best restaurants. So his staff doesn't know everything because they went to a restaurant called Great Eastern, which is really passe. It's a restaurant people would go to 30 years ago. What he didn't know is that the Great Eastern restaurant is one of the last restaurants left in the city that serves shark fin soup, which is illegal. It's banned by state law in California, but restaurants can still sell fins that have already been sliced off their previous sharks. So the restaurant Great Eastern was selling shark fin soup while Obama dined there. The fact of the matter is that's not a gigantic problem. It just shows you that the people who work for Obama don't know Chinese food. And anyone who doesn't know Chinese food in San Francisco, I don't trust. Not only is the Chinese food greasy and second rate, but the dim sum is inedible. You want really good dim sum? I'm not going to tell you where to go, because then Obama will go there and the traffic will be so bad I won't be able to get into the restaurant. 1-800-449-8255. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything light from shark fin soup to whatever on the Savage Nation? Casino, Newt Gingrich, Las Vegas. Let's go to WOR in New York. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Savage, you hit the nail on the head with your opening remark about this $10 million no-win bet for Newt Gingrich. This is a so-called backdoor endorsement for Obama.
That's how you see it. I think so. I don't think it has anything to do with Israel, because Romney's very supportive of Israel.
I spent a lot of time in Ukraine, and every day I see my country turning into another Ukraine.
You mean the United States of America? How so? Corruption, you mean? Cronyism?
It's just the working poor getting poorer, and soon our 40-hour work weeks will be 80-hour work weeks.
You know what's interesting, Jeff, is that Obama poses as a Robin Hood who takes from the rich and gives to the poor, but that's the opposite of the truth. He actually takes from the middle class and gives to the rich. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. Do you understand what I just said? Obama is a classic Bolshevik who attacks the bourgeoisie or the middle class. He's shrinking the middle class. The poor are not getting poorer. They've already been poor. They're not getting richer, though. That's why they don't like him. The poor haven't benefited from Obama, have they? No. But the rich have never benefited more so than from any president in modern history. And I mean the real big guys who live off the political system with contracts and grants, such as the ones I pointed out at the beginning of the show, where they received $260 million in so-called green energy loans after lobbying through the so-called Podesta Group. Left-wing fanatics, the Podesta Group, moved on to bigger things. Now they're lobbying like Jack Abramoff, in my opinion. The difference is, while Jack Abramoff apparently went to jail, not apparently did go to jail, apparently in this administration, if the money goes up the top and you buy access to the Obama administration, it's not a crime. It's only a crime if you buy access to a Republican. Then you go to jail. Then you have everything taken from you. But if it's a Democrat, it's called business as usual. So it's not a good time, by the way, right now. We're not a very good time if you really look at things. I was in the dentist today for a quick checkup. I won't say where, but we talked a little bit. He said most people don't even know what Obama's doing. They just don't know. The 19-year-old son of NASCAR on Fox Studio host Chris Myers killed in a car accident today. Speed Studio host John Roberts will replace Myers at Daytona International Speedway. So that's a little story for you. Very sad. People die. They get into race cars and they die. Just terrible. Cars are dangerous. You don't realize it. I have a couple of fast cars. I'm almost intimidated to drive them. I'm very much like Charles Lindbergh in one regard, not as heroic nor as famous, of course. But it was set, I read Lindbergh's biography, you know, the man who first crossed the Atlantic in a single-engine plane, the Spirit of St. Louis. As he got older, here was a man who was as daring as they come. As he got older, he didn't become intimidated. He became wiser. And he became risk-averse. You know what I'm saying? He realized that he was not immortal, number one. And he started to be more cautious, number two. I can't say I'm sitting at home growing large fingernails and I don't leave the house. But I have a couple of really fast cars, really fast cars. Most of the time they sit like a racehorse in a stable. You take them out, you realize what a fast car really is. One of the cars that I have access to is a McLaren SLR. I don't know if you've ever seen these cars. The car has 628 horsepower. Now, do I need 628 horsepower? No, I don't. I don't need 628 horsepower. It's all black, black tires, black rims, black glass. The Batmobile, the Savage Batmobile. You know, the only reason I like to drive it is when I get on the highway and I gun it. The sound that comes out of it scares the liberals in San Francisco and Marin County to the extent that every headlight within 20 miles comes on behind me. And they all have to go to the local pharmacy for a refill on their Depends. That's the only reason that I like to use that car, is to see the reaction of all of the good people, the little mini police out there. They're all little members of the police state, and if you go 5 miles an hour faster than them, ooh, did they get mad. You're stepping out of line in the new Bolshevik America. How dare you? You have a car that's faster and better looking than mine? How dare you? You have better shoes and a better looking wife? How dare you? Your roof doesn't leak like...
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, it's Rock and Roll Friday. We're having a wonderful time talking about the crony capitalism that has infected the Obama White House to an extent unimagined. We are talking about the fact that Republican Jack Abramoff went to jail for buying influence, while today, well, he would be considered a piker compared to what they're getting away with. But, of course, there's no opposition party. They're busy attacking old Romney, whose shoulders, unfortunately, look slumped and his eyes look defeated. Rick Swetorum and Newt Gingrich, who just got another 10 mil from Adelson in the casino, are doing everything they can not to expose Obama and his policies and his actions and his failed policies and his failed actions, but instead to tear down the one man who did have a chance to defeat Obama, making Obama's reelection an almost certainty. It's astounding to watch this, but we're all watching it. We are also talking about an astonishing happening in New York City, where the mayor of the city, Bloomberg, seeks to evict churches from schools, schools that are empty on weekends, holding services. The churches have been holding the services for 16 years in a legal battle, by the way, with the city. The U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear the case in December, basically siding with the church. That did not stop Bloomberg from unleashing New York City police in January of this year when they arrested 43 pastors and church members. So I ask this question of the good mayor, who is a host in the morning, I believe, on WOR, a station that I love very much in New York, that I appear on here in the late afternoon, early evening. If I could ask the mayor a question, it would be very civil. It would be, Mr. Mayor, do you think your actions against Christians advances the Christian-Jewish dialogue? Now, the answer, of course, is no. It sets it back about 50, 60 years. stirs up anti-Semitism. So why would Bloomberg be doing this? Of all the problems in New York, this is the biggest problem? A small church holding a service on weekends and paying money to do so? Why would he do this? Now, Bloomberg is rather offensive in the piece I'm about to play when you hear not only his tone, but also his arrogance. I want you to listen to clip one.
I would argue that the Constitution, which is the ultimate body of laws here, prohibits or requires you to not have worship services in a public building. You can disagree with that, and that's what the courts are there to decide.
That's absolutely wrong. That's absolutely wrong. The Constitution does not absolutely has nothing to do with worship services in a public or private building. We have freedom of religion, Bloomberg, and you know that. How many Chabad houses in this city, in the city of New York, the Orthodox Jewish Chabad movement, how many of them exist in this country in neighborhoods that prohibit the building of houses of worship? Thousands exist in neighborhoods around this country. So Bloomberg's desire to kick the churches out of the schools, the weekend use of the schools, could have an effect such as kicking Jewish schools or Jewish prayer groups out of houses in residential neighborhoods. I'm sure he wouldn't want that. That would offend one of his major constituencies, wouldn't it? The last thing he would want would be to offend the folks and the good people in Crown Heights. Nice people, good people, wonderful people. Why would he do that? Why would he pick on Christians like this? Why? I have no answer for this question. It makes no sense. Politically, this is a disaster for Bloomberg, number one. I have no idea what he's gaining by doing this. Who is he pandering to? And he's wrong on the Constitution, and he should know that. I don't know if he's a lawyer or not, but you don't have to be a lawyer to understand what the Constitution says. Nowhere in the Constitution does it prohibit the use of public buildings for a worship service. What it prohibits is, what it actually supports is the separation of church and state, which is a little different than prohibiting prayer inside a public building. He knows that. What are you telling me, that if, God forbid, a cop is shot and other policemen who are Christian pray for his life in a public hospital, Bloomberg would have the cops arrested for praying in a hospital? Is that what he's saying? He'll have his police come in and say to their fellow officers, no, you can't pray in the hospital. It's a public building. You can't pray in Bellevue for your fellow officer's life. I'm Mayor Bloomberg, and I know the Constitution. He's dead wrong on all of this. So the only question is, why is he doing it? I have no idea. Who benefits by this? I don't understand. There's millions of dollars in revenue to the city. Makes no sense. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Let's go to another topic entirely, or this topic if you wish. Let's go all the way out to Brokeback Mountain area, Montana. Alan, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Savage.
Yes.
Man, I've listened to you since I've been 16. My mom, she had you on in the kitchen. I'm 32 now, and I have a son who's 11, and he's in the kitchen listening to you right now while I'm outside talking to you.
So, well, wait, let's start with this. You haven't listened to me all these years in Montana, have you? You came from somewhere else?
Nope, I'm from Montana, born and raised.
Amazing that I'm on the air in Montana that long without having been banned by the Cowboys. So what's on your mind today?
We have this thing going on with school, and my son has a bully in his class, and I had to write this down because it feels like I'm on my first date.
No, let me explain. It is very nerve-wracking to be on radio because, you know, just relax. Make believe we're having a conversation man-to-man, just two phones, okay? Forget the millions of people who are laughing at you. No, come on. Just go ahead. Just talk like you just know me. Go ahead.
But, yeah, he's being bullied, and I know you...
Well, what do you mean? What do you mean by being bullied? Is your son a small kid or what? What's going on?
No, he's not a small kid. He's a really good, outgoing kid. He, it's that No Child Left Behind Act that has really ruined him.
Why?
They stuck him in this No Child Left Behind in first grade, and me being a young parent, I should have, you know, maybe done more research. I don't know.
But, so what are you saying? He's not able to keep up with the class in some ways academically?
Well, he's a year younger than all the other kids. We started him a year earlier, which we probably shouldn't have.
Oh, you know, that's a very interesting question. I thought about this myself because I skipped two grades when I was in New York. And I remember when I was about to do so, the teacher took my mother aside and she said, you know, your son's smart, but it may not be advantageous to him to move ahead in school because he'll be rather immature physically and emotionally compared to the other kids. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, my parents did the same thing to me, and they held me back a grade. And we discussed that with the people, but, you know, we're in that era where, you know.
Hey, I'd like to be in 10th grade right now, man. I'd have a good time.
Yeah. But they discouraged us from getting him extra help, you know, and furthering his education, and they discouraged us from the Sylvan
Learning Center. All right, so let's say he's having a little trouble in school. Who's picking on him?
One of the kids in his resource class, one that needs to be in there on Ritalin and whatever not, you know, parents don't care. He cusses at his parents.
Oh, so he's a troublemaker. So the kid is a troublemaker who's picking on your son.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's been suspended, I believe, from school twice already.
All right, so if you go and complain about him, what, you get in trouble for saying that and then they make you you're the bully if you complain?
I wouldn't doubt that. The principal, I'm not a sexist or anything, but it's a lady and...
Why would the lady teacher take the side of a bully as opposed to the bullied? Here's how you have to do this. There's only one way to do this. I raise children. There's only one thing educators respond to, and that's the threat of a legal suit. You go, you don't have to even get a lawyer. You write her a letter. You say your son is being bullied. It's an unsafe environment. If she doesn't protect your son and something happens to him emotionally or otherwise, you're going to hold her and the school district responsible. You want me to repeat that?
No, I hear that loud and clear. So
what do you got to lose by – what do you have to lose to assert yourself in the only way you can?
Well, I have nothing to lose, but, you know –
See, but listen to me. That doesn't hurt your son. He won't even know about it. The other kid won't know about it. It's a personal letter from you to the school. You could even have a lawyer write it for you for probably a couple of $100. It's certainly appropriate because if what you're telling me is true, it is an unsafe environment.
Yeah.
Son is being harmed emotionally, and he might be harmed physically, and you have every right to worry about him.
And it's ruining his grades, too. You know, his last couple of weeks.
Well, I wouldn't hesitate for one second to send such a letter, and I wouldn't even parse the words. I wouldn't be worried about the principal's or the teacher's feelings. Because right now, your son's feelings are all that matter. That's all that matters right now. You're his parent. You have to look out for number one. Don't worry about the other boy. Worry only about your boy. Don't start thinking about what she'll think or he'll think. I don't see how this could hurt your son. Do you?
No. You know, I was raised to stand up for myself. I had to punch a few bullies in the mouth when I was younger. And, man, me and my wife have really come close to telling him, give him the okay just to haul off and just let him have it.
No. Because if he does that, he is then going to be deemed the aggressor. He will wind up being punished. It will set him back for years. Of course it would be satisfying to punch the bully in the nose. That's the cartoon solution. But the long-term solution is different than the cartoon solution. The long-term and safer solution for your son is the letter I suggested, and I'd even add a little stinger to the letter. Not only would I say that, I would demand the school district provide special tutoring for your son at no expense to you because they're failing him.
Yes.
All right, you see, Dr. Savage just helped you, right, Alan?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My wife's like, why are you going to call him on that? I was like, you know, he deals with life situations. You know, I've listened to him.
I had children in schools. If I could tell you the things that were done to them by teachers in this school system that we had to stand up for them, you would never believe half the things that were said to us. And this is long before I was in radio. I'm talking 30 years ago. Long before I was known for anything other than writing health books. And people didn't know me at all. I wasn't an outspoken conservative. No one knew me politically at all. But I had to stand up for my children because there are some situations that require you to do so. Alan, the letter is simple. You remember it?
Yes.
Okay, I'll be right back. It is Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. playing some Chinese rock and roll here in honor of the President of the United States, who was raking in the cash yesterday in my hometown of San Francisco. And apparently he was told to go to a restaurant that I wouldn't be caught in. It was popular in the 1970s where he bought dim sum. I wouldn't recommend it. It's greasy. The food itself is old-fashioned. But see, he should have looked at me because I would have said, look, President, we disagree politically 180 degrees, but I know food, and you don't go there for dim sum. You go out to the avenues where the Chinese go for Chinese food. The Chinatown is where the tourists go for Chinese food. You know, according to the Jewish calendar, the year is 5772. You don't know this. That's right. According to the Jewish calendar, we're in year 5772. And according to the Chinese calendar, the year is 4709. You know what this means? It means that the Jews went without Chinese food for 1,063 years. This period was known as the Dark Ages. Somebody just sent me this, which we're putting up on michaelsavage.com. It's a very funny thing. Probably everyone heard it by now. Very funny. Shana Tova. Jewish calendar year 5772, Chinese calendar year 4709. It means the Jews went without Chinese food for 1,063 years. That is the Dark Ages, my friends, not the Middle Ages, as you have been taught in school. Unfortunately, the wrong concept of the Dark Ages. Here's a caller you're not going to believe. I think I have the smartest listeners in talk radio. Not the largest audience, no. It's said to be the third largest radio show. I'm number two with web broadcasting in the country. But in terms of the intelligence quotient, I would argue that my audience has the highest IQ. Why? Listen to the following caller. I asked why Mayor Bloomberg is attacking Christians and kicking them out of empty schools on the weekend when it makes the city millions of dollars. And this has been a fight for 16 years. Why is he picking a fight with Christians right now? Listen to this caller, Sacramento Allen. Go ahead. What's your opinion? Why is Bloomberg doing this politically?
Mr. Savage, I think Obama's not too happy with his vice president. And I think Bloomberg would like to take his place.
I think that makes the most sense to me. That makes the, so in other words, he's showing his atheistic leanings in order to appease the folks who are running the country.
Yep, I think so.
He is also showing his Christophobic leanings, might you say? Shall we go a step further?
Yeah, I think so.
Why would Mayor Bloomberg back the Ground Zero Mosque, the Victory Mosque, which was offensive to almost all Americans? Every poll showed 90% of Americans opposed the mosque at Ground Zero. Why would Bloomberg go out of his way to support the Ground Zero Mosque with a lie about the First Amendment and now twist the First Amendment and say, while I support the Ground Zero Mosque, I want churches out of empty schools? What does that tell you about him?
Yeah, it shows me that he's showing Obama.
It shows he's perfect for the Obama administration. There you go. Well, you see, all right, my audience is the smartest in the country. You're smart, Alan. May I ask your calling? What line of work are you in?
I'm retired from the retail.
You're retired. You don't want to say retired what, though?
Oh, yeah, I was a grocery clerk for 37 years.
You see, this is what makes America great. I'm always impressed with people in America. It's why we won World War II. It's the average man, the ordinary man, the ordinary woman that makes this country great. And believe me, you can't fool them all of the time. As Abe Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people some of the time, and Obama can fool some of the people all of the time, but Obama can't fool all of the people all of the time, especially the Savage Nation. Yeah, that's the way it goes. We are running so close to out of time. We're shooting right into the hard stop break here. I'll be back shortly to take your calls and bring you all of the latest news, as well as play more Rock and Roll Friday for Friday on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Coming soon, the new bestseller for Michael Savage, available nowhere except on the sites such as Amazon. But you can look it up, Trickle Down Tyranny, and see the jacket I'm wearing and the turtleneck. Trickle Down Tyranny.
Savage.
For all things news and talk radio, visit trncentral.com.
You made me cry when you said goodbye. Ain't that a shame? My my tears feel like rain.
Moving into Friday night across the eastern seaboard, still late afternoon on the west coast, where Obama is carrying around an extra airplane for the cash he's raising in Hollywood. Apparently, Spielberg has just partnered with our good friends in China to create a new film studio in China. As I said to you yesterday, they're trying to buy as much access as they can to the geniuses of Hollywood to portray themselves as they are not in China. And so who should they turn to other than Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Ratzenberg, and Spielberg? You're not going to ask me how to make a movie. So you go to Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Ratzenberg, Matzenberg, and Spielberg, and then you show a benevolent China, a nice China, a good China, where there are no concentration camps, where there are no political prisoners, where there is no oppression of Christians. You see, that's what you do. You go to Katzenberg, Katzenberg, Matzenberg, Patzenberg, and Spielberg, and then you understand that the same people who will not make a patriotic movie will make patriotic Chinese movies for a buck. That's all. What more do you need to know? Simple. Everything makes sense once you understand it. It all adds up. So what's on my website today? Everything. It's so frightening you shouldn't read it. Actually, when you think about it, if you go to my website, it'll give you indigestion. Top right, Democratic Convention co-chairman's company got $234 million in stimulus money. Duke Energy. They lobbied through the Podesta Group to make sure that the Obama administration continued to push the big lie of global warming and fund green projects. We know what those are. Green projects refer to the green that they make by making things no one needs. Ah, there's other stories. Plenty of other stories. You can go look for yourself. Some of them are horrible. I don't even want to tell them to you. There's going to be a big atheist conference next week, coming out party in the Capitol next week, the Woodstock for the non-believer. Where's Abby Hoffman now that we don't need him? Atheists bill big names for coming out party in Capitol. Big names. Oh, big names. Big names where? On the dope circuit? What do you mean big names? Big names on the dope circuit. Big names in the atheist world. See, here's the thing I don't understand. Let's say you're an atheist. Why do you have to attack Christians and Jews and even Muslims and Buddhists? Why do you have to go out of your way to offend religious people if you're an atheist? Why? Can anyone explain this to me? Why, if you're an atheist, do you have to make it an issue? What do you have to wear? Do you have to wear it on your shoulder? What's the purpose of this other than to antagonize Christianity? Why? One of the goals of the gathering is to encourage attendees to come out of the closet as secular Americans, you hear? Or supporters of secular equality? What does that mean? What do you mean secular Americans? You know, when you look at the politicians attached to it, you see the face of communism all over this. So they could do what they want. It's a free country. You could ignore them. Evolutionary biologist, author, and atheist Richard Dawkins appears at a festival in Jaipur, India. He read a statement lashing out at the idea of faith at the forum. So, because he's an evolutionary biologist, it makes him smarter than you? Or he knows something you don't know? Or he mocks you because you're a man who believes in God? Is he more of a man than you are, or less of a man than you are? Is he an equal man to you? If he's an equal man to you, why does he have to offend you? Why does he have to go out of his way to attack you as a Christian or as a Jew? Answer, because this is not about atheism. This is like the liberal in the Prius flashing her headlights at you if you go 2 miles an hour faster. That's what it's all about. It's nasty liberal socialists trying to offend Christians because it's a cool thing to do. The good time promised on the rally site includes entertainers such as Adam Savage. Never heard of him. No relationship. Then there's a comedian I never heard of. And I don't know who else is going to. Who are the politicians going to this? Let's see. Religion, the growth in no religion portion of population is going up. Non-religion is the fastest growing religion while Christianity is shrinking, they boasted. All right. I can't. I'm not here to save a religion. It's up to the religion to do. So it's up to you to think what you want. What do I care what you think of? Get back. Walk around in dungarees now with a big jacket. Big jacket, a big mouth. Tell me whether you're still an atheist. You know what I mean? Give me a call in at 1-800-449-8255 yourself. Tell me who you're going to pray to, yourself or God. You're, oh, big shot. Oh, no, I hate this. I don't believe in God. I'm a top guy. I don't need anything. I know. I don't know. I don't need no God. That's for those dumb Christians and idiot Jews. Yeah. What do I need? I don't need anything. Get back to me when you and tell me what you believe in. Never mind the foxhole. Get back to somebody in a cancer ward and tell me what they're grasping. You go into a ward where someone is sick and about to have surgery. I don't care whether they were an atheist 10 days ago. You bring them a Bible. If you know them now, I'm not saying just go and walk around in wards. And you say to them quietly, would you mind? I have nothing to offer you but a prayer from God. See what happens. See if the atheist is still full of himself. See how pompous they are. See how much vinegar they still have in their system to hate God and hate religion. That's all. Get back to me at that point. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Stephanie in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Dr. Savage. I just wanted to comment on this Adelson fellow and why I feel or have heard why he might be still supporting Newt Gingrich's campaign.
Well, he just gave Newt Gingrich another $10 million. It's not maybe. He is. He's giving him another $10 million.
Correct. But, one of the rumors, obviously there's a lot of rumors in the buzz, is that he actually feels, he knows Newt Gingrich's campaign is dead, and he actually feels that Mitt Romney is the only one with a chance to beat Obama, and supposedly he wants Newt Gingrich to stay in to actually hurt Santorum, and this $10 million is supposed to go to anti-Santorum ads.
That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, not because you made it. I'm not criticizing you. No, money talks in politics. What he should do if he wants Romney to win is give Romney the $10 million. No, I think it's because he wants Romney to lose because he has something to gain from Obama.
Okay.
Right now, any so-called Republican who is attacking Romney, as weak as Romney is, he's the only chance we have. And Gingrich is unelectable. Sanctimonious Santorum has unelected himself. So doesn't make any sense to me. 1-800-449-8255. None at all. He looks beaten. His shoulders are hunched. His eyes look like a man who's in a corner already. I looked at Romney. I got sad for him. The shoulders are rounded and forward. Doesn't look very, very, confident. And his eyes have the look of a man in a 15-round fight who's in the 11th round and losing, which is not a pretty sight to behold. Who's the big winner because of Newt Gingrich's vicious, disgusting gutter tactics? The fundraiser-in-chief. The man who doesn't know good dim sum from bad dim sum. Someone's walking around the radio studio. I can't. Houston, Texas. Laurel, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Well, good evening, sir. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. I've heard you for many years, and I've been following you.
Well, thank God.
Question.
Thank God I have at least 9 women listeners of the 9 to 10 million overall listenership. You're one of the lucky 10 women.
And I'm plus the 45-year range.
Yes. Okay. So what's your comment today?
I would ask a question. How about a Teddy story?
Well, I wish I had a good one to tell. He got bitten last week, that you know, right?
Yes, sir. I've been paying attention.
Yes, he got bitten by a friend dog, no less. Puncture wound right through the upper arm, which freaked us out. He's getting much better. He's healed very well. And he went from 3 legs back to 4. The only time he didn't feel good on the 4th leg was when he's back to himself and he started to do his thing on a lawn and he did the digging. I think he overworked his front leg, and he started limping up already on the 3rd leg, the 3 legs. That was sad. But he's back to 4 legs. I don't let him jump off the bed. I talk to him. I say, Teddy, don't jump. Your foot hurts. And he doesn't jump. He's spunky. They don't know that there's anything wrong with them. They're beautiful. They're just the most beautiful things on earth. If I could, I'd keep a pet horse in the house, but I just can't see myself doing that. It's enough with poodles. No, but I wouldn't keep. I mean, I love looking at horses. I don't have an affinity for horses. I didn't grow up in Utah or the West. I look at the animals. They're so noble. They're eating them now, putting them in cans and selling them to Mexico. Canned horse meat. The federal government just gave the slaughterers the right to kill horses. Well, because it's green. It's a green thing to do, kill horses. That's what the Environmental Protection Agency argued. Because horses produce manure. Manure is a vile producer of carbon. Carbon, as you well know, is pure evil. Just ask any of the morons who are in the EPA who don't even know what carbon is. If they knew the rudiments of high school biology, they know that more carbon is actually good. That some warming is the only reason we have table grapes, vegetables, food. The reason we can feed 7 billion people on the planet is because we're no longer in an ice age. Don't try to tell that to the idiots who work for Obama who don't even understand high school biology. We actually need more warming, not less warming. More warming would produce more food on the planet for more of the hungry masses who can't get enough food, apparently. They're all starving. There was no starvation. Now there is starvation. Now there's an obesity epidemic. But now there can't be an obesity epidemic because Obama's in power. That would make him look bad. So there is no obesity epidemic, but they can't say there's starvation because that would show he's not feeding the poor. So we don't know whether to say they're fat or skinny. Well, they're going to eat carrots, eat healthy, don't eat like I eat, don't want to do what I do, do as I say, not as I do. I'm the queen of the fries, but you're supposed to eat carrots. I like dim sum. You should eat steamed food. I'll eat fried food. This is the way it is. Talk green and just be mean. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Sodom and Gomorrah, welcome back to the Savage Nation. You know, it's interesting to me that when I first started in radio 16, 17 years ago, 1994, do the math, I went on the air in a local station and I was quoted by a liberal newspaper, meaning any newspaper at the time. Today it's even worse. And they said, oh, what a joke this conservative guy is on radio, Michael Savage. He says America is becoming like Portugal, that it's going to be like Portugal if this keeps up. Well, now move the clock forward to 2012. Here we see what Portugal, Greece, Italy have become. The countries are falling apart because of the welfare states. They have tried to produce some belt tightening, and now there's a fear of a coup as Greece hits meltdown. The lazy bums in Greece. No, we don't want to work no more. We don't want any more work. We want big pensions and big vacations, and, well, we don't care who pays for it. Euro hits a three-week low as RBS and Barclays were threatened with having their credit ratings downgraded. So what's going on? Why are people freaking out in Greece? The answer is because the Germans are saying we're not going to pay for your vacations anymore. That's all. This is the future for all of us. This is the future for all of us because Obama is taking us down the road of Greece, Portugal, and Italy. You think we're in better shape financially? We are not. We just have a bigger army and a bigger political, a bigger propaganda machine in this country that has you believe that we're in better shape. The Greek people are also paying the piper for having been dragged into the EU by their leaders. That's another issue that we shouldn't talk about right now. It's a big story. The EU was the new soft communism. It was the third way vision of Tony Blair and Bill Clinton. The third way was soft communism. Everybody knows that who studied this. But that's too big a problem for most of you. If you really want to know, if you're a reader and you want to get to the bottom of things, there are books you can read on this. The best is yet to be published, Trickle Down Tyranny. It's my magnum opus. I really think it will be my last nonfiction book. I can't promise you that, but there's no reason to write another book after that. Maybe I'll write fiction, children's books, poetry, stories, spiritual books. maybe make a movie, but I don't think I'm going to write another nonfiction book because if I can't stop the socialist machine with my books and broadcasts, then it's futile. It's that simple. The Republicans had the greatest opportunity to unseat this petty dictator in history. It was great. It was unbelievable when this started. He was about the most unpopular president in modern American history. He's known as the most divisive president. It's the most corrupt administration in modern times. Naked corruption. Naked cronyism. Crony capitalism. The words don't even have a meaning for this man. There's absolutely nothing to stop him. Republicans come along. Easy victory for Romney. Then what happens? Crackpots appear. Underminers appear. Workers for Obama appear. But worst of all, The very cunning, very, very cunning demonic Newt Gingrich appears, and he undermines Romney at every turn. You see, you got to understand something. I keep saying to you, Romney is a good man. Liberal man, but good man. Liberal Republican man, but good man. I wouldn't use the word good for Gingrich. It's not the right word for Gingrich. I generally would say Romney is a good man. I had dinner with him a few years ago. Does that mean I know him? Yes. Yes. I can know him about as well as you can know anybody. You can tell an awful lot about people sometimes over one dinner. Am I stupid? Do I think I know everything about him? But no, of course not. But he's a decent man. Decent man. Good man. Family man. Great family story. Wonderful wife. Wonderful sons. Wonderful grandchildren. What a story. What an American story. Along comes this grotesque creature, Newt Gingrich, the poster boy for K Street, the poster boy for old white male, the poster boy for corruption, the poster boy for everything everybody in America doesn't want anything more to do with, and suddenly gains traction. Why? Because little men living a filter fish, like Wolf Blitzer, who are not really humans in my opinion, they're a mishmash of old fish that were put together by some strange forces like a Frankenstein and then smashed together and given eyes and glasses and put on television. Living gefilte fish like Wolf Blitzer. Living old squid like George Stephanopoulos. It reminds me of an old squid, like a foul old piece of calamari that you found underneath the restaurant floorboard, were put into a suit with cologne. And they used Gingrich to undermine Romney. And now Romney looks like a beaten man. Shoulders slumped, eyes somewhat frightened and terrified. Frightening to watch this. There's only one thing Romney can do at this time. And that he did the right thing by withdrawing from the gefilte fish debate on CNN that was coming up, where the little gefilte fish was going to again try to pit one against the... All right, I love Wolf, but with the microphone running around with the little feet. All right, you... Yeah, to you, Mr. Santorum, what do you have to say about Romney's cuffs? All right, Santorum, you're on. We'll be right back. I'm Wolf, the gefilte fish blitzer. We'll be right back in the kitchen to see what we can do to undermine that good Christian man. See, I see things somewhat in a caricature, cartoonish way. I admit it. I just loved his little two-step with the little shiny shoes running around the studio. All right, we throw it to you, Mr. Santorum. Tell us why you hate Mitt Romney. Mr. Gingrich, can you tell us how you can undermine Mr. Romney in a few words or less? See, they get rewarded for that. They move up the totem pole the more they can undermine a man 50,000 times better than themselves. So finally, after listening to me and not coming on the show, apparently one of his stooges listens to the show on a regular basis, I heard, from someone who recently met with him. And the stooge told him, don't debate anymore. So he wouldn't debate. So the human gefilte fish had no one to attack, so they canceled the debate. That's the one thing he can do. Number two, what he's got to do now is remind Americans of the corruption and failures of the Obama administration. That's all he must do. He doesn't have to do it angrily. He doesn't have to do it maliciously or any other way. Just lay it out. Lay it out. It's there. It's so clear. Start with the military and show what Obama has done to destroy the greatest military in the history of the world. Start with NASA and show that it was Kennedy's vision that Obama destroyed. He took the greatest vision for space exploration and destroyed it. One man destroyed the space agency. Destroyed it. Go down the list and show what he's done. That's all you have to do. And then let the American people decide. Will they do it? I don't know. I have no idea what Romney will do. If he follows the advice of the McCain advisors, forget about it. We will have trickle-down tyranny in a way you can't even imagine. It won't be trickle-down. It'll be naked tyranny.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com. Top right, FBI busts Muslim trying to blow up U.S. Capitol. Short time earlier, he had been praying at a mosque in Washington, D.C., the new caliphate. Coming soon, the new bestseller from Michael Savage, Trickle-Down Tyranny, Crushing Obama's Dream of the Socialist States of America. Pre-order your copy now. FBI purging training materials of truth about Islam. All gone. Here's a multimillionaire Democrat who I call a dolt. Dolt Dem gives millions to Obama, but not this year because he's weak on climate change. Duh. How Warren Buffett plays politics to make money. No kidding. Intelligence says Iranian missiles could hit U.S. targets. Ex-DHS agent gets life for drugging and raping women in a warehouse for pornography. What else is on michaelsavage.com? Fears of army coup as Greece hits meltdown. Obama budget to subsidize $10,000 for each green car. Each green car, and I wonder how many of these cars are built by his cronies. All of them. Police seized $6 trillion in fake T-bills. Here in San Francisco, students are taught how to put on condom when drunk. This is what they're teaching them, not how to read or to write or to do advanced math. This is a sicko. Obama wrecks the Mars program. No kidding. British leader says U.S. screeching toward cliff of socialism. Hollywood bowing down to China to portray them in a light that's unreal. By the way, if you wish to get a free newsletter from Michael Savage, it's on the left side of michaelsavage.com. All things Savage for free. On the bottom left, cancer drug reverses Alzheimer's disease in mice. All these stories and more today on the Rock and Roll Friday Savage Nation. Casino man bets $10 million more on Newt Gingrich. Santorum stand on social issues draws scrutiny. What else is in the news? Feds arrest man heading to U.S. Capitol for suicide mission. Told you that. A record 19 reporters and media executives have quit the news business and joined the dictator, I mean the president's office. Atheists to hold massive rally on National Mall next month. What else is in the news? Well, you'll hear more and more and more as it comes up today on Rock and Roll Friday, right here on the Savage Nation.
His door is always open to bipartisanship. We obviously don't always get it. And you've also heard the president say that in the areas, you know, where we're struggling to get legislation through because we don't have the partners we need, we will continue to keep the door open to find those partners. But this president is also going to continue to do what he can to move the ball forward for people, even in the absence of congressional action.
You know how much that irritates me? Well, just think how your throat would feel this spring without Pine Brothers softish throat drops. Remember Pine Brothers? Those soft, delicious throat drops we all grew up with, the ones your parents bought to soothe you when you had a sore throat that you couldn't stop eating after your throat got better? Well, they're back in natural honey and wild cherry flavors, and they're just as wonderful and effective as you can remember. Visit them on the web at pinebrothers.com. That's pinebrothers.com. The Burden of Babylon. I'm reading from Isaiah now in the Savage Nation. Whether you've never touched a Bible in your life or you are familiar with it, please listen, because it's a blueprint for what is coming. The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see, set ye up an ensign upon the high mountain, lift up the voice unto them, wrote God, wave the hand that they may go into the gates of the nobles. And he goes on, they come from a far country, from the end of heaven. Even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole earth. Howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand. As destruction from the Almighty shall it come. Therefore shall all hands be slack, and every heart of man shall melt, and they shall be affrighted. Pangs and throes shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman in travail. They shall look aghast at one another. Their faces shall be aflame. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, Taliban, cruel and full of wrath, and fierce anger, to make the earth a desolation. Of course, we mean your earth, Taliban, and to destroy you, the sinners thereof, out of it. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. And I will visit upon the world their evil, and upon the wicked their iniquity. And I'll cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease. And I will lay low the haughtiness of the tyrants, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban. I will make man more rare than fine gold in your land, even man than the pure gold of Ophir. Therefore I will make the heavens to tremble, and the earth shall be shaken out of her place, for the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and for the day of his fierce anger. And it shall come to pass that as the chaste gazelle, and a sheep that no man gathereth, they shall turn every man to his own people, and shall flee every man to his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through. And everyone that is caught shall fall by the sword. The babes also shall be dashed in pieces before their eyes. Their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, who shall not regard silver. And as for gold, they shall not delight in it. And their bows shall dash the young men in pieces. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the pride, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban. And your land, what will come of it? The Taliban who send us anthrax? Those of you who are so haughty now in your filthy nightshirts, who are taking pleasure in killing the men, women, and children, and cutting the throats of women, Mr. and Mrs. Taliban, here is what God has for you. Your land shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation. Neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their folds there, but wildcats shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of ferrets, and ostriches shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there. And jackals shall howl in their castles, and wild dogs in the pleasant palaces. And her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged.
Savage.
Night's going to bring, let alone tomorrow. I mean, we make plans. Sure, we plan. Everyone thinks they're going to live a ripe old age. They're going to be surrounded. They're going to get a little ill, not totally ill, not very badly ill, not never cancer, no heart attack, nothing like that. That happens to other people. They're just going to slowly slow down, and oh, they're going to wind up sitting quietly in a resort somewhere, a resort-like retirement community. They'll be able to take care of themselves right to the end, and they'll be surrounded by loving friends and family, and they will die in their sleep at approximately 99 years of age. It happens perhaps one out of a billion. I don't know what the number is now. Maybe one out of 500 million might go that way, or one out of 300 million. I don't really have the numbers, but it's not happening to you, Johnson. More likely, it will be a horrendous slow death, either from cancer or some other debilitating disease, or even worse yet, Alzheimer's disease, where you're left for hours at a time in a nursing home in a corner, staring at a curtain, unable to move and not knowing who you are, where an orderly will beat you about the head and neck slowly with something that hides the blunt trauma and steals the small change that your adult son or daughter brings you. So, you know, given that that's the fact of reality here, and I'm in a long day's journey and tonight mood, which I've been in since I'm about 16 years old, but particularly now. I'm not sad. I'm not agitated. I'm just affected by this because, you know, look, the Grim Reaper comes around and he gets closer and closer, and you see him circling and you start saying, there we go again, you know. And so what is it that you want to do with the rest of your life? You have to ask yourself. If you're a driven man as I am, and I've been driven all my life, let me tell you right now, this is nothing new to me. I've been driven from very early on to do things in my life. And I'm no saint. Don't confuse me with trying to tell you I'm such a saint. I'm not Al Gore, okay? I'm none of those people. I'm just like you. Maybe I'm a little luckier and maybe I'm a little more hardworking than some people, but I'm not different than the average intelligent person out there in some ways. In some ways, I'm a genius. In some ways, I'm a big idiot. I understand all of that. That's the human being. But I have a gift. There's no question I have a gift in radio. It's probably inherent. It's innate. Nobody taught me how to do radio, and look where I am after 13 years. I'm in the winner's circle, just where I knew I would be. Now, I could spend the next number of years just trying to get to number one, the number one slot. I could do that if I wanted, and I could probably win. I mean, I could change my time slot and go right up against Rush, and I'm telling you, Rush wouldn't stand a chance. In 1 year, he wouldn't be number one. I would be number one. But I don't have such a desire. It doesn't mean anything to me. It has no meaning to me, none whatsoever. I've always seen the big picture. I've always seen the longer picture. There's very little that I want for materially. I only want my health and the health of my children, to be honest with you. But then I say, well, what about my poor country? What good is all of this health? What good is a reasonable success if the have-nots are being brought in by the tens of millions? And if the have-nots are being told that they can take from those who have created it by these evildoers in the Democrat Party there's nothing to work for. They'll take it all away from your inheritors. They will not inherit Jack Johnson. They'll give it away to the bums who didn't work for it. And that motivates millions of people like me. Let me tell you right now, illegitimi non caberundum. We don't want the illegitimate taking away our livelihood, and we don't want the illegitimate stealing from us any more of our damn tax money. Here in the state of California, we pay not only federal tax, we pay 10% of our income as state income tax. 10% right off the top. But wait, there's a bigger insult. Last year, while you slept, they added another tax for people in a slightly higher bracket in the state of California of an additional 1% called a mental health tax. So that's 11%. Now, what the heck is a mental health tax? Where does the money go? Well, you say, well, it goes for mental health. No, it probably goes to gray-bearded child molesters so they can write papers and go to conferences in Thailand and rape young boys. That's where the extra 1% goes. I can guarantee you it doesn't go anywhere else. And where will it end? Nobody knows where it'll end. So these are the things that are agitating me. And I read you the opener, how long do we have, and that the Athenian Republic lasted not very long, but that in 1787, Alexander Tyler, a Scottish history professor, said a democracy is always temporary in nature. It simply cannot exist as a permanent form of government because a democracy will exist up until the time that voters discover that they can vote themselves generous gifts from the public treasury. And that's Hillary Clinton. That's the invented man called Obama. That's the Biden, that's the Edwards mentality, which is to live like commissars in the ex-Soviet Union and tell you that they're for the people. They are absolute Bolsheviks. They're right out of the Communist Party USA with a slight differential. Believe me, and not a great one at that. So that's what I was thinking about. So now let me go a little bit more here of where I'm coming from and how I got there. In my neighborhood, I had seen a 57 Eldorado for a while in a garage. I know you're saying, how the heck did he jump to there? Well, watch where I'm going, and you'll see I'll come back to where I started from. And I had seen, so I inquired from a neighbor's neighbor, is it for sale, blah, blah, blah. So I went and looked at it yesterday. It's a 57 Eldorado, totally restored, frame up, really nice car. I have a 65 Caddy convertible. I have a weakness for 60s and 50s cars that are perfect. I don't really have the place to put it, but I looked at it, we talked. And this gentleman's from Sweden, very nice man. And before long, we started talking about the Muslim attempt to take over Sweden. I said, how did you Vikings let this happen to you? He said, we were too tolerant. He said they came in asking for asylum, and we woke up, we can't even go into some cities. And he said, don't even get my mother started. My mother is vehement on this issue, that if we don't crack down on them and deport these imams, we're going to lose Sweden. And on and on and on. And I said, well, look at the illegal aliens in America. 1 million illegal aliens, which will be the death of the United States of America as we know it. It will be over. It will be over. As far as I'm concerned, it's a declaration of war against our sovereignty. To me, it's a declaration of war against the people. I don't know how else to put it. What do you think? I like saying this? You think I don't know I'm putting myself in danger? I'm nobody. But I'm not alone. Tens of millions of you understand what's at stake. You don't want the illegal aliens to be granted amnesty. You know what that'll do to this country. You know it'll give them the right to bring in 5, 10, as many relatives as they want. Within 5 years, you'll be living in Tijuana with all of the horrendous problems of Mexico on a street corner near you. And if you want to live in Mexico, then I suggest you go live in Mexico. But for God's sakes, don't make this great nation into that corrupt socialist dictatorship called Mexico. And so having churned all of this over the weekend, I woke up at 3:30 in the morning. I couldn't sleep because of the mortality thing and the this and the that. And I started to add it up, and I said to myself, I'm leveling with you like I'm talking with you in a bar. And this is one of the things I can do very well. And you listen because it's like a guy talking to you from the heart and from real. So I know you're listening, those of you who want to listen. And those who don't, well, I can't help you. If you want to hear a regular, this is the Savage Nation, and we'll be talking. I'm not going to do that. There are other people who do that very well. This is much different. It's conversational, and it's based upon the reality of the man doing the show. So you'll go along with me. And I need a break coming up, but let me start with this. I said, did you add up the decades of your life? Now look at where you were from like age 11 to 21. Look at the change in your life in those 10 years. I said 11 to 21 was one of the most dramatic You can't even do that lump. That's too big. Because at that age, 11 to 15 is already a change in your life unlike perhaps any you're ever going to experience again, except perhaps from middle age to old age. So let me back up. From like fifth, okay, let's start when I graduated high school, college. I don't even know how old I was. I entered college when I was, I've forgotten completely. I don't even know anymore. I'm losing track of it. I was like 16 when I went into, I was 16 when I got out of high school. I skipped the grade, and the way I was born, the month I was born, they put me in, blah, blah, blah. So I entered college at 16. I graduated college at 21. It took me 5 years because my father got a heart attack, and I had to leave school for a semester and go run his little store and sell various things and leave school. But the fact of the matter is, I said, well, now look where you went. Yeah, now I was thinking, like from there, from when you got out of college, 21, you were just a social worker on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. You were working with welfare grifters who were ripping the system off then, and you knew it. That's why you quit the welfare department. I have story after story. You say, like the road, how I became a conservative. Well, let me tell you where it started. It started when I was a welfare worker. They didn't call it anything else then. It's called welfare. You went and you gave them a little check, and you found out they were grifting everything under the sun on the side, making believe they were poor, those bums.
Savage.
President Obama is slashing military spending so he can give more money to his contributors. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation to talk about this nightmare, the president's anti-defense budget, is California Republican Congressman and Marine Captain Duncan Hunter Jr. Congressman Hunter, you're always welcome on the Savage Nation, and welcome back.
Hey, Mike, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Please give my audience a little overview of what the defense budget really looks like on the inside.
The defense budget is actually, it's not that bad with what they have to work with. You can tell that our military leaders really put a lot of thought and a lot of effort and truly did, to the best of their abilities, match what Congress did to the Department of Defense. I mean, the Republican Congress has cut defense in the last year, and that's the main problem here, and what you see is our military leaders in the DOD dealing with that. Now, what that means is we're going to have less capability in the future, and that's just kind of they're taking that right now. The DOD is as the way of life, but their budget does not match their strategy. This Asia Pacific strategy, the way that they want to use our special forces, the way they want to use our Navy and our air power, we're going to be making fewer Navy ships. We're going to shut down over 300 aircraft in the Air Force. Cutting down on the Army, we're cutting down on the National Guard, we're cutting down on the reserves. So all of these different programs, we're actually cutting down on UAVs as well. So all of these different programs and technologies that the Defense Department talks about relying on now in the future, we're also cutting those. So that's why the strategy doesn't match the budget. But I will say that our military leaders did the best with what Congress gave them and with who we have as president. I mean, they did an exceptional job considering who we have as president.
Congressman, what damage will these cuts have on our national security?
What these cuts do is this. If you control the oceans, and this is an axiom that is true, I believe, and is probably one of the most important defense axioms of all time. If you control the oceans, you control the world. And if you control space, you control the oceans. And that's been true since boats were invented and the Vikings went pillaging and raiding. I mean, that has been true forever. The Brits controlled the world. France had a big navy. They controlled the world. The United States, using its navy in World War II, really was able to establish command of literally the entire world because of its navy. The minimum ship level that the Navy says that they need, and this was post 9/11, was over 300 ships. We have about 285 now, and we're not going to be getting above that. So we're that short on ships, and ships are what allow America to project its power throughout the world. You know, people don't trade with us and like us because we're nice people and we have Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm and great shows on NBC Thursday night. They trade with us and deal with us because they have to respect us. And they have to respect our power and our ability to reach out and touch them. And as that diminishes, other countries' spheres of influence, China, India, Russia, Iran, Syria, Turkey, I could go on, North Korea, their spheres of influence will then start pushing out into ours, and that's how long-term a nation starts diminishing its ability to affect everything on a global scale. I mean, this is much more long-term than this, just this year or next year. We're looking at the next 25 years of American supremacy kind of declining based on a budget like this, if that makes sense.
Where in our defense budget could we cut that you think would not affect our national security? How about diversity training?
Great question, Mike. Here's what we need to focus on. We literally have hundreds of thousands of acquisition contractors. And if you look at any of these big programs, like the F-35, the Littoral Combat Ship, these big programs of our next generation weapon systems, they all have gone over time. They've all gone over budget. We're looking at the new Humvee, you know, the Marine Corps, the Army, the Navy, they all have Humvees, and they've had them for decades. We're trying to get a replacement for that. And just today, I asked General Odierno, who's the chief of the Army, why they're not using Ford. Ford, you know, the giant American car manufacturer who did not take bailout stimulus money, by the way, has volunteered to save the government tens of billions of dollars by competing to produce the next Humvee. The DOD is not allowing them to compete. The acquisition system is broken. So as long as you have hundreds of thousands of acquisition contractors in DOD whose job it is to perpetuate their own jobs, meaning creating bureaucracy and creating loops that people have to jump through to compete for DOD contracts, a lot of money is being wasted there. Billions and billions of dollars are being wasted. Bad decisions are being made when we need transparency and competition. I mean, that's how you bring costs down. So that's where I would look to. I would look to DOD and say, hey, we want to get the weapon systems to our Marines and soldiers. We want to get the ships to our sailors. We want to get the planes to our fighter pilots and our bomber pilots. So what we're going to cut now is we're going to cut you, DOD. We're going to cut the self-licking ice cream cone that just perpetuates itself into infinity. That's what DOD has now. That's where we can cut. That's where we can focus on.
Okay. If you were writing a defense budget, how would it differ from Obama's defense budget?
Number one, I didn't vote for the Budget Control Act that is going to make us basically, that's the big sequestration where the Defense Department, on top of the $50 billion a year they've already been cut, adds another $50 billion a year on top of that. I didn't vote for those, right? So that would have been the very first thing. My budget would have had more money in it, and it would have mandated the audit of DOD much sooner. Now, Secretary Panetta said that the 2017 DOD audit, because in reality, we don't even know what DOD spends on what. We don't know how many people they have exactly, what they spend it on. Congress doesn't know. And so in our oversight role, they have to be audited. Secretary Panetta said that they're going to be able to perform an audit on themselves or have an audit done by 2014 now. So that's you know, better news. I would do it now. You have technology now that all the big financial firms audit themselves with. We have the ability to do that. But I would simply have more money for more ships, for more technology and aircraft. And I would be doing these acquisitions a lot better where it doesn't take years and billions of dollars of cost overruns to get something bought. We have good competition, transparency, and then go with it.
Congressman, in regards to Iran, what do you think the administration should be doing?
We have to know where the red line is. Secretary Panetta and the president have talked about the red line. One, we have to know what it is. I'm not on the committees that would allow me to know where or when that red line gets hit, and we have to strike them before the red line gets crossed, and the red line is, of course, them getting nukes. And I'm not worried about them launching nukes at the United States. The problem is, if Iran gets nukes, as soon as those nukes get on a transport ship that has thousands of these QuadCon boxes, those nukes then disappear. It's very hard for any intelligence community to track what happens once those nukes get on ships. That's what we have to worry about. We have to worry about nukes coming across the border from the south and the north, or brought to one of our east or west coast ports. That's what we have to worry about. But in answer to your question, you can call it a preemptive strike. I don't want to invade Iran. I just want to take away all of their capability to build nuclear weapons. And I think that's what, in the end, even with this president, as weak as he has been on Iran, I think he's going to have to do that. He's going to feel pressure from Congress. He's going to feel pressure from his own military leadership that advise him on what to do. He's going to feel pressure to act on Iran, and hopefully that pressure overcomes any inherent liberal tendencies to appease Iran. So the answer is we have to stop him from getting nukes, and that's kind of it.
Congressman Hunter, thank you for joining us on the Savage Nation, and thank you for your service to our great nation.
Mike, it was great to talk with you.
I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
My father was an immigrant. Yeah, he came here when he was 13 or 7. I don't even know. He was already... He was not born here. I was born here, and he was a citizen when I was born here. I'm not an anchor baby. Don't get me wrong. I'm not an anchor baby. But I have one foot in the old world and one foot in the new world, so I really speak from, let's say, a knowledgeable position about it. I understand what it's like to live in a poor household with many people. Trust me, we lived in a place. We didn't even have a bedroom in the Bronx. And I think about it. There was one bedroom. And there was a tiny living room with a fake fireplace. And I remember we hung fake stockings on the fake fireplace. I thought Santa would give me a gift. So, you know, part in the old world, part in the new world. My grandmother didn't speak a word of English in the house. She spoke the old languages from the old country. I couldn't believe, I'm thinking about it now. And she was so wonderful. Oh, did I love her. God, did I love that woman. She was so beautiful. Very stoic. Very, very Russian, this woman. She spoke to me in Russian, by the way. I don't think you know that. I never told you that. I am not a Russian language speaker, but it's strange. I can understand the language to a certain extent. And it's a very hard language for an American to learn, incidentally. It's not an easy language. The alphabet's very complicated for an English speaker. I can just imagine how hard English is to learn for a Spanish speaker, by the way. It's not an English is a tough language, incidentally. Very tough. But in my home, my parents spoke only English. So to make a long story short, here I am, man-child in the promised land, and when my turn came to assume my mantle in this country and my chosen profession, they said white men need not apply. The positions are closed. So you can understand where I was coming from. So to make a long story short, I cut a Virgin demo in 1993, and I send it out to about 220 radio stations. I get a return from about 5 to 10 of them. And 5 of them say, that's really good stuff. Would you like to work on our station? I remember to this day, one of them was in Boston, of all places. I don't remember the station that said, we like what you did. But nevertheless, I was living in San Francisco, as I am now, and one of them came from a local station, and the guy says to me, good stuff. Would you like to come on in and talk to us? And then they gave me a fill-in. Well, anyway, here's the Virgin demo, 1993, Savage's Virgin demo, play 01.
Direct from the towers above Manhattan, it's the Michael Savage Show. To the right of Rush and to the left of God, and now, Michael Savage.
I'm glad I can be with you 7 nights a week because these stories are just not going away. I mean, every day in every way we're getting assaulted. Look at these questions before us today. Look at the questions before us. You know, they say that I'm to the right of Rush and to the left of God. I really don't think that that's funny. I really don't think that's funny at all. Do immigrants carry diseases? Are lawyers really humans? Is white bread safe to eat? How come women with mustaches, with peace and love and turtle-saving bumper stickers, are the most likely to cut you off on the highway? Is Bill Clinton's mother a lesbian? By the way, a quick note. Nazis, skinheads, KKK, don't call me. Crawl back into your bunkers. You've given true conservatives a bad name because you permit the sick leftists to paint all conservatives with the fascist brush, okay? Don't call me. Do Labor Secretary Reich's feet touch the ground when he's seated on talk shows? I don't know. But these are some of the questions that I think we have to answer here. Because
all right, let's pause. You see how daring this was? You see how good? Now you say, well, it's commonplace today. It was not commonplace in 1994, by the way. It was really daring. It broke open new ground. I changed the media landscape. And that's it. That's how I started. Then I did a show. I'll never forget it. I'm going to just tell you the story, and then we're going to move on, you know, under the weather. I'll never forget it. So the local station manager calls me, and he says, would you like to fill in? I said, sure, I'll try it. Now, I had never done radio except on book tours. I had done 10 national book tours where you go around and do radio and television. They were very stressful. But along the way, I remember various program directors had said to me, you know, you're really good on the radio. You should consider a career in radio. I had no way. How could you get a job in radio? It was as real to me as becoming an astronaut. Of course I wanted to do it. But I didn't know. How would you get into radio? It seemed as difficult as becoming an astronaut. I had no way to do it. So let me put it to you that way. But let me tell you something. Desperation breeds creativity, and creativity breeds a lot of you take a lot of chances. And anyway, this is it 15 years later. I think that fate had a hand in this and God. I think I really was set out to do this from the beginning. All right, so he says fill in. All right, the first show I fill in for is on a liberal talk station in San Francisco. It's still there. It's a powerhouse, 50,000 water. And he gives me a show to fill in for. That guy is on the overnight show, and he's a hater of the lowest order, hates white people, panders to the most, let's say a Reverend Wright type, as exactly a Reverend Wright, all night long hate radio against whites, against America. He himself, of course, is living the high life, as is Reverend Wright in his new $10 million house. You understand how it works. Curse America and go and laugh all the way to the bank. You know, yeah. All they needed was the Kool-Aid, like a Jim Jones job. So that's the kind of show I didn't know, really. I never listened to the cretin. I'm never up in the middle of the night. So he said, all right, go into. I go on the air, and I start to tell about illegal immigrants and this and that. I get hate callers like I have never encountered in my life. Because remember what my last incarnation was. I was the good doctor. I was the nutritionist and the herbalist who gave lectures around the world. And by the way, I had even given a lecture. You'll never believe this story. I don't think I've told it. Normally, I would give lectures about health and vitamins and nutrition in America. At one point, I was director of nutrition for a major international nutrition company. They sent me to Malaysia to talk about their products. My audience were all Muslim women. So I go into the audience. I could not believe it. They were all Muslim women. They were a great audience. These were moderate Muslim women who were interested in nutritional supplements. They received it very well. I spoke, and it was translated. So I had been all over the world doing lectures, and I was usually very well received, and frankly, I was the beloved doctor kind of thing. Now I do talk radio, and I walk into a propeller of hatred from the left. I never encountered such hatred from the people that were the regular listeners of this guy's show. That night at 5 in the morning when the shift ended, remember what it was, I think it was 1 to 5 in the morning, I don't remember. I drive home from that station. The whole way home, I'm like in a paranoid state. I'm looking in the rearview mirrors. I thought I was being followed. I get home. The next day, I say to my family when I got home and they woke up, I said, I'm never going to do radio as long as I live. I said, I can't take the hatred of the callers. The liberals are the most hateful people I've ever encountered in the world. I said, no amount of money on earth would be worth doing this. I called the station. Actually, they called me the next day when I woke up and they said, wow, you did a great job, Savage. Would you like to fill in again? I said, no, I would never fill in again as long as I live. I don't want to ever do radio again. Ask them. I'm not making it up. I said, well, they said, why? I said, I'm not going to go into a show like that again with these haters. They said, well, how about filling in during the day? I said, I don't know. I don't think I could do radio again. It's too hateful. The people who call it are full of hate, the left-wingers. Well, they said, okay, I tell you what. You won't have to do a night shift again. You'll do a day shift. And then, I swear, then I did a little fill-in on the day. And I shook up the whole local media, and then eventually they created a local conservative station, and I went on that. They made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Remember, I had a fairly good living. I was making a good living as an author and as a consultant, and I didn't want anything to do with radio, but the temptation was too great. And I got to tell you something else. Radio, you ask anyone in the media who knows how to do it right, they'll all tell you the same thing. Nothing in the world of media can compare to the high you get off radio. There's nothing that can compare to the feelings you get when you do this right. There's no performance in the world that equals radio. I don't care what you do for a living. Look, I wrote books. I'm not a Dostoevsky. I didn't write fiction. But I wrote really fine nonfiction. My nonfiction were all Persian miniatures. They're excellent. In fact, my first book, Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, is still in print. I wrote books to last. They were not just fluff. I was a craftsman as a writer. However, writing is a very difficult profession because it takes a year to conceive of a book, 2 years to write a book, till it comes out is like another 9 months. By the time it's out, you're not connected to the product anymore, to the work. There's no immediate feedback. And here's an interesting side note. I had an editor at Houghton Mifflin in Boston when I wrote A Maximum Immunity, a book that went into six different languages. It was a great book, by the way. It's still around. I mean, maybe it's a little out of date in some ways, but in terms of describing the immune system, it's a very good book. The editor, who was a really high-class old Bostonian, took me to lunch in one of the great Boston restaurants, and she said to me, you know, you really are made for radio more so than you are for writing. I said, are you insulting me? She said, no, listen to what I'm saying. She said, you're a guy who's got so much energy, and you're so immediate, and you can deliver an idea immediately from the top of your head perfectly.
Savage.